It's time for Hanson McLean Advisors Money Matters, hosted by Scott Hanson and Pat McLean, credentialed financial advisors serving you since 1993.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for joining us.
That's right. We are glad that you are here with us, both myself and my co-host here. We're both financial advisors. We spend our weekdays working with people like yourself, and we come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. And we've been doing this for nearly 20 years, and we certainly appreciate we've had lots of different types of questions over the years, I must say.
Yes.
Everything. And the questions tend to change with
the economic cycles.
Yes, so, which one would expect, obviously.
Yes, yeah. So back in 99, it was tech. Everything should be tech. Everyone should own tech. And then during 2006 and 2005, it was all residential real estate. And how do you borrow enough money?
We had a lot of questions. People call, how long do you have to own a home before you can get the $250,000 exclusion? And their whole plan was to flip it into something else for the $250,000. And there was the 1031 exchange. We're going to exchange this. And it was all about that. And then the crisis hit.
Yes. And then the real estate market. I mean, there were people calling us that were, when we'd ask them, well, what kind of rent will you be getting on these homes? They would say, well, we're not allowed to rent them out because it's against the association
neighborhood. Oh, I remember
that.
We're
just going to buy it and
sell it later.
Sell it later because it will go up. And the question we always ask is, well, if that worked so well, why wouldn't the people selling it to you just do the same thing?
Well,
you don't know.
I know we've
asset
seen it all.
Classes move.
And I think lately the big issue has been interest rates are so low, I got to do something different with my savings.
I have to.
The money that I've had in CDs and money market accounts for my whole life, I've got to do something different with it now.
Because it's going on 3-4 years where these yields are so low on their,
the people
they're getting the 1%.
Yes.
They're saying, I can't do this anymore. And the problem is, the longer the stock market, the longer the other assets get have a run-up, the harder it is to stick with that particular philosophy. And that may be the exact time you need to stick with that philosophy. But certainly, the most important thing in everyone's portfolio, what we have learned over the past 20 years of doing the radio show, is diversification.
That's right.
There is not any one asset class that always is in the sun.
Well, I think the challenge, Pat, is we all would like to somehow believe that we can figure out the market cycles, that we can tell by something's going to give us some signals that are going to let us know that oil prices are going to fall, or the euro is going to fall,
or interest rates are going to go up, or interest rates are going to go down, or the stock market is going to do 15% this year.
We would all like to believe there's some sort of signals out there that can point us in those directions.
And there are many people that tell you there are signals out there that will point you in that direction.
Oh, they're all over the place. Matter of fact, if you said to yourself, I believe the stock market's going to return 10% for 2015, you could go search online and you'll find lots of economists, lots of people predicting the same thing, and you can validate your own personal thesis.
Or if you said, I think the market's going to go down by 10%.
You can find the same thing. You can find all kinds of well-educated people who have great degrees from the top schools telling you the same, it's going to go down, to validate your personal thesis as that as well. That's the challenge. And I think most people with some investment experience have come to understand that. But when it still comes down to our own personal times, it's sometimes easy to forget about these cycles and the fact that nobody can predict these cycles. And here we are 4 years in with no interest on our savings. And it's a challenge because people are starting to, I don't go to those free dinners to hear about investment products, are starting to go now.
Yeah.
People say, I don't invest anything outside of CDs, are starting to listen to somebody.
And now they're starting to talk about indexed annuities or non-traded REITs or things that don't have any correlation to the market. They use the word guarantees. When you hear the word guarantee, you've got to be careful.
Yeah, so it's just
If anything is yielding above what you get in a CD, it has inherent risk. That is just the fact.
Yeah.
That is
anyway. So that's what we're seeing now, and Who knows what we'll see?
In the radio show a year from now with questions?
It'll change.
Yeah.
At some point in time, interest rates will be up again. Yeah. It is kind of amazing, though, when we got the 10-year Treasury at roughly 2%.
Yeah. And it's been here for quite some
and
time.
And the 30-year Treasury under 3%. And I just remember, there's a big corporation in town that had this massive buyout. And there, the interest rate on the 30-year Treasury was a little over 6%. And it was like, wow, can you believe 30-year interest rates are so low? It'll probably never be this low again.
Yeah. That was a...
And Europe, a lot of these banks now in Europe, if you want to park money in the bank...
They charge you. And part of it has to do with the fact
that... Yes, you heard that correct. You have cash that you want to invest in the bank to
they
hold
say to
your
you,
cash.
We're going
to
charge you 0.1% or 0.25% just to hold your cash. And the reason is that they have reserves that they need to set aside, and those reserves cost money, and they don't necessarily want your cash.
And there's a deflationary environment there in some areas of the Eurozone.
There is absolutely a deflationary environment. And let's spend a minute talking about deflation and why it's bad.
Oh.
When prices drop, why is that bad? Joey, our producer, you went to school.
Why? You would think that's good. Things are cheaper.
Right?
Lower cost. Lower
why price. Is it bad? Well, it's bad because the consumer normally will tighten up their spending, because if I was going to go out and buy that new automobile and there's a good chance that it's going to be less expensive
2 months from now,
then I will not buy it now. I'll wait 2 months and go out and buy it. But the problem with it is if you're in a long-term deflationary environment, you'll kick that purchase off for years and years and years, and it actually starts feeding on itself, which is it creates higher deflation. And it's bad. It's bad for wages. It's bad for economic growth. It's very, very bad.
You know, here we are. The financial crisis back in 08.
It's hard to believe it's 7 years ago, isn't it?
Yeah. But there's been this talk of inflation.
It's actually about six.
Yeah, whatever. There's been this talk of inflation.
Oh, right? Since day one.
Right? And the concern inflation. How many calls did we have about inflation? Our clients were concerned what happens when we have inflation. Inflation's going to kick up again. And the concern we've got now, really, is not inflation.
It's deflation.
Deflation. And we get these reports that unemployment keeps going lower, every time I read that.
I just get mad.
When you read those
Yes, why do you get mad?
Because it's smoke and mirrors. It means nothing.
What matters is the participation rate. That's what matters. I mean, you know,
it's kind of like if I had a kid who decided to take remedial courses instead of the normal courses in high school.
And then bragged about their grades.
My grades, look, I went from this GPA to that GPA and bragged about it every time they did. I would say, what does that mean? It's nothing. It's not apples to apples.
You'll never amount to anything, son.
That's usually what I say, yes.
So the point being, you know, did a great job explaining this quite some time ago on his radio show was Tom Sullivan. About the participation rate. He did an incredible job explaining. And what does the participation rate mean? It's the percentage of the population that actually can work, which means of working age, that is working. That's the participation rate. Unemployment rates say, if I'm looking for a job, am I finding one? There's a difference. And unemployment rates change because as labor markets improve, some people actually re-enter the job exploration market.
So a few weeks ago, I read California's unemployment rate is 7%. I'm like, that means nothing. That does not mean that only 7% of people are unemployed.
That does
at
not
all.
Correct.
Our participation rate is roughly 62% of working of able-bodied working Americans are actually working.
So
it's the lowest it's been in 40 years.
So Scott, so what happens is
if the participation rate continues to decline, so will the unemployment rate.
That is correct.
So if people say, let's say we have a 7% unemployment rate and 2% of those 7 say, you know what? I'm not going to look for a job anymore. I'm just going to quit. I'm just going to get my tax credits, my refundable tax credits, and live off that and live in subsidized housing, and I'm just going to not bother to do anything anymore. Our unemployment rate would go down at that point in time, as crazy as that would be. But that's how they measure it. That's why whenever we see these unemployment rates,
And the reason there isn't wage growth is because the participation rate is so low.
Yeah. Anyway, hey, if you want to be part of the program here at Hanson McLean's Money Matters, you can reach us, question regarding anything in your finances. I'd love to take your call. 916-921-1530. Again, that's 921-1530. If that's busy or for toll-free, you can call us at 1-800-834-1530. And you could also send us a question at, you can email us a question, questions@moneymatters.com. So again, if you want to call and join the program, 921-1530, or you can email us a question at questions@moneymatters.com. We'd love to hear what's on your mind and help you with anything that's going on in your financial life. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll continue in just a moment. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters on this fantastic weekend. I'm Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean, thank you for joining us.
That's right. Glad you are here with us. And
it's nice.
Yeah. I noticed you were sitting texting with your son over the break.
I actually had to reach out for a little phone call because it's a Saturday and I've got four kids and
all but one drive now, right?
Yeah, and that was the one I was talking to.
Need to ride somewhere.
Yeah,
get the other. You still have two at home. You have what? Two kids at home that drive.
Yes, and they do a good job of shuttling the younger brother around. So no complaints there. They go to the gym together all the time, and they go to a lot of Kings games together. The two youngest, the 13-year-old and 16-year-old.
I was at a Kings game a couple weeks back and sat next to your daughter and the 16-year-old son, and I was amazed. I watched them how well they get along. I was amazed.
Really?
Yeah. My kids, like,
are you sure they weren't mine? No, I'm joking. They get along well.
Yeah, I was
in
quite,
public. In public.
In public. I thought I was quite.
No, they get along pretty well.
I thought it was nice. They get along so good.
Yes.
And seem to be enjoying each other.
So anyway, I was my son wanted to know what time I was going to pick him up. Actually, I think what he was trying to do is buy more time, which is what he was trying to do.
Yeah.
But, right.
That's funny. I had a conversation with my daughter this week. She's down a student down in Los Angeles, a college. And
does she like it?
She loves it, yeah. She hates the weather, which is hilarious, because she says every day's the same. It's 80 degrees so often she can't stand it anymore. Anyway, she was going to get a job 29 miles from her from her school. I said, honey, that in Los Angeles and your job's supposed to be like later afternoon? I said, it'll take you hours. Oh, no, Dad, no. So the idiot dad, of course, I don't know anything.
How long did it take her?
She didn't even start. She had this interview, and apparently the person interviewing says, you know, I'm really kind of concerned about your time in here and getting back. And, oh, I think I'll be fine. And it took her 2 hours to get back to her campus after that interview.
Oh.
And by the time she got back, she called and said, you know what, you're right. This isn't going to work.
Not taking the job.
I don't know why I'm discussing
that. Was nice for her to want to take a job, though. It was good. You want that in your child.
Oh, yeah. She says, because I send her a little stipend to help with some spending cash in college. But I have to remind her, look, the classes are actually kind of important. That is what I'm paying for as a father. This isn't like a summer camp here.
Yeah, the grades matter.
They do matter. I don't necessarily expect straight A's, but you got to be applying yourself, particularly if it's something that you think you're going to be doing in the future. Anyway.
And the grades are good?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I mean, you're not straight A's, but what am I going to?
But it's not a C's a degree kind of attitude either.
A what? No, I wouldn't be paying for that. After a while, it'd be time to come home. Right. Well, she ain't coming home either, so I don't know what's going on.
She doesn't know
that. Don't want that either.
I remember a college professor once saying to me that, Mr. McLean, the world needs ditch diggers, too. That's what he said to me.
Did you not have a good grade in this class?
I don't believe so. And I said to him, I know, I will employ many.
You had that response right off the bat?
Yeah.
He probably went home and
he's like, nah, that boy's a loser. He'll never make it. That's probably what he said to himself.
That McLean, why is he even in this class?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he actually.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. So think about it. There are things I'm fascinated with today that I had no fascination with when I was like younger.
Okay.
Like history. I love history now.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember I had a class in college. History of American Thought and Values.
Sounds like actually an excellent class.
You would think. I would love to take the class today. I hated it then. I barely read anything. I just kind of...
You know, people change.
I guess people change. I don't know.
That's what I love about my Netflix. Oh.
What, that people change?
No, is that you can watch so many documentaries on Netflix and frontline shows.
This is a financial program. We'll get back to the calls here in a minute. You do watch some...
Oh, it's so awesome. On Netflix, you could search by documentaries and just watch documentaries all night.
They're not all good, though. I've tried some, but there's some bad.
Most frontline things are good. PBS. I enjoy it.
You search, like, frontline document. They do.
Oh, yeah, you watch Frontline. The Inside Man is a great one.
All right, let's take some calls here. 921-1530.
Spurlock, what's his name? Martin Spurlock?
Okay, what?
Inside Man?
The heck are you talking about? Sorry, apologies to the rest of the listeners. This pats off in the Netflix land. All right, this is a finish. 921-1530 to join our program here. Let's talk with Lee. Lee, you're with Hanson McLean.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, Lee.
I'll be turning 51 this year. I've been in CalPERS for a number of years, and I'm considering retiring, leaving the CalPERS system, and pursuing my own business, which was also established over 10 years.
Okay.
Plan to work for a number of years into the future, and my spouse will also be deciding in the next couple of years to retire also from CalPERS. Just wanted to get your thoughts on retiring too early.
How many years have
you
been?
This is a great question. Because here, just step, before we look at the numbers, here's what it comes down to, right? I talk to people sometimes in their 50s who hate their job and are literally counting down the days. I remember talking to a guy who's got 7 years to go at this employer. And I'm like, I remember thinking, that is no way to live, right? That's no way to live. And so you're 51.
How long have you been in the CalPERS system?
Over 23 years.
23 years, CalPERS, wants to leave, do something else. What if you left today, what would your pension be?
About $3,500.
And if you stayed till, say, age 60, have you any idea what that would be?
It's probably closer to $7,000 or $8,000.
Yeah, so here's...
And what's your approximate income from just from where you're working, not your business?
Probably around $140,000, $150,000.
And what do you think you could be earning in your business?
Well, he's done it for 10 years. What are you earning now?
He's done it part-time now.
Yeah.
It's part-time between $40,000 and $50,000.
And if you spent your full time there, what do you think you could earn from that?
Probably the same as what I'm doing today.
So that's hard. And how do you, if you had a choice between the two jobs, obviously you would take the self-employed one or you wouldn't be leaving the PERS one. Is that correct?
Sure.
So I think, if I were in your situation, here's how I would look at it. I would look at it and say, what am I giving up? What's the dollar amount today? What's the net present value of that difference between $3,500 a month for the rest of my life now? Can you defer that $3,500 until age 60?
Yeah, he could take a DVP. You could take a deferred vested pension on that.
Okay.
Can you wait and have it continue to grow and take it later?
Yes. Yes.
Sure.
Yes,
sure.
Absolutely.
Got it.
Yeah, Scott.
So here's what the calculation is. You leave today and you defer your pension till age 60. What would that be? You continue on in your job, you take till age 60 and you take your pension.
And the difference between those two is what you're giving up by going to the new.
And then you can look at it and say, what would I need to save on a monthly basis today to make that up? And that will tell you exactly what the difference is.
And remember, you're not retiring, because you use the word retire. You're going through a job transition, and there's a big difference.
No, I didn't use
the
word retire. I think you just pulled a pension.
Yeah.
And do you have kids at home still?
One.
And how old are they?
They're in college.
Oh, they're in college then. And how much do you owe on your house?
$200K.
Yeah, so that I like Scott's. What So the other difference, too, is...
Well, money's a part of the equation. That's why he's calling us for finance guys.
Correct, right?
Right.
Money's part of the equation. The other equation is, do I like my job and can I tolerate... If I owned my own company, would I work till I was 70 or 75? Does it give me the flexibility to live the life I want to live? Right. One of the benefits of owning your own company is, you know, when I first started 21, 22 years ago, I used to call it a halftime job. I could work any 12 hours of the day I wanted. But that was when it started. Today, there's a lot more flexibility in the work for me, which is a huge part of the benefit of owning your own company and working for yourself. That all comes into play here, right? So from a financial standpoint, the only way you're going to be able to look at it if the incomes are the same is what's the difference on the deferred vested pension between now and in the future, and how much am I going to have to save?
But you can also look at it. But also, let's say Lee pulled the plug today.
Plus, he's got equities building in a business.
Let's say he pulled the plug today, took the pension today to help supplement the income that from his business, focused on building his business. It's making, what, 40 grand a year now. You kind of know your worst case. You've got your pension and the business income. You could probably make things work as is.
And would this business be something you could sell in the future?
It's possible, yes.
So that's a big deal.
Because
equity in a business is a big deal. So we're going to Scott, we are absolutely not helping this
man at all. No. Here's what we can say. We've seen lots of people stick with jobs to get to a point of financial independence at retirement and have hated the journey and get into retirement.
And hated the retirement.
No, seriously. And retirement's not what it's all cracked up to be for many either. I think for most people, the idea of quitting work and sitting around doing whatever all day isn't necessarily that appealing. So,
and I would say I don't hate the journey. I love the journey, but I love something even more.
That's hard.
Which is what you're alluding to.
Yeah.
My gut would say go for the business.
Well, that's you. That's your natural tendency, Scott, because you started your own business. It's a hard leaving that much security behind. It really is. It's really difficult. You're 51. Would you step out and start your own company at 51?
I don't know. From a purely financial standpoint, the safest route is to stick with your job. You'll have a nice pension at age 60 or even work a few more years. The safest route, continue to work till they boot you out because you're making a good salary. But at some point in time, you've got to say, what does Lee want? And is financial security much more important than everything else in life? And for a lot of people, they get to the point and say, nope, I'm going to go after that. That's more important to me. You already have some financial security.
Yeah, I'm thinking we're on the same wavelength, I think, on this, you and I.
Yeah. It's not really a financial question.
Yeah.
It is partly. I mean, I do have a spouse and family.
Yeah.
But you've already got a business that's earning some income.
Yeah, it's not a new idea. If this was a brand new idea,
we'd say forget it.
No, it's tried and true right now.
And you think you could scale this thing?
Definitely.
Could you hire people to help you in the business? Do you see five or six or seven employees at some point in time?
Yeah.
And you could actually resell their labor at a profit?
Definitely.
I would go. I would absolutely go.
Yeah,
I'd work. But what you just did there.
You know, you're at a great stage in your life. You think about the years of experience you have, the wisdom you've got, your youngest kids now in college. Your home concerns aren't what they were years ago.
If you can hire employees, you can sell the company.
Definitely. Yeah.
And that's where you build equity. And
you're going to the greatest wealth is not coming to financial advisors where we can earn a percent or two more. It's in your own career. That's where people make their money, their career, whether it's a business or a trade they do or something. It's their career.
So, yeah.
Great. Thank you very much.
All right, Lee. I hope that helps as we've sat and talked about all the – anyway, I hope we helped you along the decision point. Glad you called, Lee. I think it's an exciting time for him. Hey, we need to take a break. 921-1530 is the number. You're listening to Hanson McClain's Money Matters. Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean, thanks for joining us.
That's right. We obviously enjoy doing this.
Do we?
We do appreciate it. Huh?
We enjoy doing this.
We do.
Yes.
Obviously, you can tell by some of the times when we go off on these tangents that
it's nice.
We're only interested in.
It's special. Yeah, it's good. It's working.
It's special?
Yeah, it's nice. It's good. Not unhappy about it at all. That was, talking to Lee, that was a hard thing is, because I'm 52 and I own my own business. And when I started, there wasn't a lot of security there. But when you don't have anything, you got nothing to lose. Right? And that was kind of my attitude when I started my own company, which is, I don't have a lot. So,
well, that's why, I mean, one of the things we talk to young people, I remember talking to this young, in the last year, I met with this young man a few times. He's mid-20s, 26 or something. He was a kind of a captive agent at this insurance agency. He started telling me all the business he did.
That's a terrible name.
He was captive. That's how he felt, too. And I really encouraged him. I said, go out and be your own insurance broker on this thing. And I really encouraged him. And
did he do it?
Yeah.
Oh,
and
good for him.
I met with him a week or two ago. He came back to let me know how things are going. He's all excited and asked if he said, would you mind mentoring me once or twice a year if I've got a question or guy?
Oh, that was nice of you.
But one of the
things, did he ask for your business?
No, he hasn't asked for my business.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if I would. Anyway.
Because he's done this to about 60 business owners, Scott. He goes around town asking people, these business owners, if they would mentor him. And then he slowly sneaks in and asks for the business.
Wouldn't be a bad strategy. Who are some of the prominent business people in town?
Most business owners don't mind if the person is respectful of the
time.
Most
people in their career, as you get a little older, you like to see younger people coming along and you want to help them in some of those sort of things.
Yeah.
My point is, and I think back to your point, it is much easier to take business and career risks in your 20s than it is in your 50s or 40s. Because a lot of times people will get into a certain job, into a certain industry, they hit midlife, and they're like, wow, I'm not really liking this, but now I have no choice.
That's correct.
I've got kids at the house. I've got a mortgage. I got a spouse. I got all these responsibilities.
This is where my contacts are. This is what I know.
And trying to make a career change midstream.
And which has happened in many industries where the industries actually just go away in your midstream.
Yeah.
The industries.
But there's also, I think it's important to look at it. You're midlife and you don't like your job at all. You're sticking around purely for the finances of it. Sometimes it makes sense. Look, is there a way we can make the household run on less finances to go and pursue something that is going to add more value? Because as financial advisors, we don't believe that there is this direct correlation between more financial security and more happiness and joy in life.
That is correct.
Now, if you've got zero financial security, can create some challenges. But I mean, even look back on life. Some of the best times with my wife and I when we were young and broke and didn't know how we were going to pay for things and so the spaghetti factory was like a nice date.
What's wrong with the spaghetti factory now?
You know, I'm just saying
who doesn't love the mizithra pasta?
Oh, I do like this, but you know what I'm saying?
I do. I do like the mizithra pasta with that brown butter and a little bit of sausage on the side.
That sounds pretty dang good right now, actually.
So, there was actually...
I haven't been there in a while.
A study.
I go to Spaghetti Factory.
I like the Spaghetti Factory. a study yesterday, actually, more money doesn't make you any happier, but less money, but lack of money can make you unhappier. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I can see that, obviously. But I still think there are times when if you're in a career that you're not liking, it's causing a lot of other stresses in life, and you can switch. It's going to take a hit on finances to switch, particularly if it means the difference of you're grinding it out so you can quit at 55 and retire at 55.
Where if you get a job that you really like and a career you like and you want to do it till you're 75 or 80 or 90.
So what'd you say? You're 51, 52?
52.
52. You don't plan on retiring at 55?
No.
60?
No.
65.
No. I don't know what's going to happen when you're 65. Right. No, when you're in your 40s, think about it. When you're in the 30s, You can't see your 40s. When you're in 40s, you can't see your 50s.
I know.
When you're in 50s, you can't
see. I'm 48. I have no plans of retirement. Having said that,
I
realize there might become a time in my life. Well, I might be forced to, as a lot of folks are. Health issue of a loved one. That happens. Or I might just get to the point where it's like,
yeah, I'm not enjoying this anymore, yes, or whatever, right? Yes, you don't know.
Anyway, we're enjoying it now.
Although I do know, most of my life I've had jobs I've liked, but my first job out of college for a large corporation, I am thankful for that.
For the job?
For the job. I worked there for 18 months. It was a huge corporation, Fortune 50 corporation. I did it for 18 months. I did very, very well at it. The day I called to quit, they said, we really would like you to stay because we were discussing promoting you. I was as unhappy in my life as I had ever been working that job.
Really?
18 months. As unhappy as I could ever remember being. And I'm thankful for that experience because I realized I was not the big corporate man. I just didn't fit. Not that I couldn't do well, because I did well. I just didn't like the structure of the bureaucracy of a massive corporation. So I quit.
Well, it's good you learned that as your early age, right?
Yes.
All right. 921-1530, if you want to join Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Again, 921-1530. Let's talk with Jeff. Jeff, you're with Hanson McLean.
Yeah, let me take you off the speaker here.
All right. Thank you, Jeff.
Okay. My brother-in-law has kind of an interesting situation. He asked me kind of for advice. The thing is, his son is married to a woman who has some medication problems.
Okay.
And about a year ago, a major corporation literally dropped a truck on top of her car.
Okay.
Her mother's car, that is.
Okay.
So she is receiving a large settlement, and her children are also receiving settlement. She has lived with him his kids are living with him, his grandkids are living with him, and her brother is living with him.
Okay.
They're soon going into a court hearing where the court is going to demand that any of the funds that go to his son's wife's underage brother,
uh-huh,
are going to have to be put into some sort of a trust fund or annuity. Because he's a minor.
Yep.
Now, there's this history of drugs.
Uh-huh.
And so he very much wants to see the money get put into something that the son can tell that.
Got it.
His non-relatives that live with him can't tap quickly.
Yep. So,
I've also reminded him of all of the comments that you have folks have made about annuities
different kinds of annuities.
So you'll hear us say on the show often that there's 700 different flavors of annuities out there. This annuity is common. So for the rest of the listeners, what's happened is there's a minor child that somehow has been injured by some action that the court has mandated that they're going to receive a settlement. That money is normally given to them in the form of an annuity, which basically is a promise of payment at some point in the future. Your question is, is there any ways that we could stop other people from raiding that annuity in order to use the money for drugs or alcohol? Is that your question?
And also, is there a type of annuity? I've heard you guys talk about annuity upfront costs and surrender.
Yeah. Those are the kind that are sold at the steak dinners and stuff. There are actually products that insurance companies will sometimes design a specific annuity for a specific case. They're called structured settlements with an insurance company. That way the insurance company has this responsibility of doling out the dollars at the appropriate ages. So if it's structured that way, the woman with the dependency on prescription drugs will not have access to it.
The only one that actually has access to these dollars will be the minor themselves when they become age of majority at age 18. After that, the court may actually have decided that the money's going to be pushed off longer than 18. But most of them, the dollars come to them at 18, and it is that child's money once they're age of majority. So there's really nothing you could do about it.
What are the upfront costs, is my question.
No, their costs are low on this.
On these things, they're very, very inexpensive.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about it. Forget what we barked about annuities in the past, because
this doesn't apply.
Different kind. Jeff, so much appreciate the call. And that's
completely different beast.
Hey, we're up against the clock. Stick around for more Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
Thanks for being part of our program today as we're talking about financial matters. And 921-1530 is the number.
That's area code 916-921-1530.
And you can also send us a question at questions@moneymatters.com. We're going to take a couple of those in a minute.
Or you could go to, 800-834-1530. 800-834-1530.
Or you can drive by the office here and throw a brick through the window with a note on it that says, here's my question.
You could do
Or
you can
stalk one of us, find out where we live, park in front of our house. That'd be a way to get a question. Find out where we shop, show up there.
You don't even know where you shop.
What are you talking about?
How often do you shop?
Grocery shop?
Yeah.
I go to the grocery store a couple times a month.
Do you know?
Maybe more. I'm going to the Nugget after this program.
I do like the Nugget.
I shop at Nugget and Ray. You know what's interesting? There's so many places to get groceries now.
It's very competitive
Target,
industry.
Sometimes it's usually like I'm with my wife if we're at Target because I can't stand.
Yeah, that's a long.
Ooh,
did you see how much money they lost in Canada? Target.
Yeah, how'd they do that?
They went
I
into a
it that much
oh, they went into a marketplace in a big way, thinking that they were going to figure it out, and they went in guns a blazing. And what did they lose there last year? $1 billion.
Yeah, they're closing them all down instead of test marketing a couple markets. You mean?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it just tells you
execution.
that culturally they just didn't fit in with the Canadians. And who doesn't love a Canadian?
Like a 51st date.
Hey.
What was my point here? I totally lost my train of thought. Why am I talking
about we were thankful
Target?
For
anyway,
that.
Yeah, thankful that I lost. Oh, God. Finally. Hanson doesn't know where he's going with this. Good.
Oh, good
to
deal.
All right. We want to talk about Roth versus traditional retirement accounts, because a lot of us now have available through our employer a Roth 401k option.
That is correct.
Most of us also have the ability to contribute to a Roth IRA. Now, there are some income limits when your income, when you're married and it gets close to 200 grand, it phases out. So for the vast majority, though, a Roth IRA is an option, as is a Roth 401k. There are all kinds of calculators. Right now, if you Googled Roth calculator, you can find some calculator. Plug in some numbers, and it will tell you, are you better off using a traditional 401k or IRA where you get the tax deduction up front and pay the taxes later, or are you better off using the Roth where you don't pay taxes now, but it's tax-free in the future?
But the reality is the number always comes out to be just about the same.
If your tax rate didn't change, it would be the same. Having said that, nine times out of 10, we believe you'd be better off using the Roth option.
And why is that?
Because here's the saying goes, use your 401k today and you get the tax deduction, right? So if you're putting in, let's say, $10,000 a year, it only reduces your paycheck by about $7,000.
Assuming that you're at a 25 and 5 federal and 5%
or whatever
state, right in there about...
But the thing is, that tax savings, it's not like people go and save it.
They normally spend it.
It's spent on
But if you put the Roth contribution
it's spent,
in.
Who knows where it's spent, right? It just gets spent. It's somehow it's needed to keep
Chuck
up.
Chuck E. Cheese.
All that stuff.
Big Five.
Target. It gets caught up in the. If you use the Roth, you don't get the tax deduction. So you're whatever you're contributing.
Oh, wait, stop. Go back to the deductible IRA. So when you pull that money out in retirement, you pay taxes on it.
Yes.
So
you don't have as much there.
So
let me ask you this. You get retirement. Option A, you've got $1 million in your 401k, traditional 401k.
How much net that spendable will be taxable. Income do you have there?
Option B is $1 million in your 401k in the Roth. That's tax-free. Obviously, everyone would rather have the tax-free Roth. Because there's limits on how much we can contribute to these plans. If there were no limits, then we may talk about some different things because you can contribute. Because the vast majority of the time, you are truly better off taking advantage of the Roth.
Well, and especially if you've already been taking advantage of the deductible 401k contribution.
Now you already have a bunch saved.
Because you now
there.
Have a bunch saved there, and you're diversifying your tax risk as well as your portfolio.
The danger is Congress changes the rules in the future. And what we just saw, beginning of this year, in the President Obama's tax plan, which won't come into law, but had a proposal of eliminating the tax-free withdrawals of 529 plans. Came right out and said, we don't need these. Most of the people who benefit from 529 plans are the wealthy, so we should do away with the tax-free benefits anymore. They did say, his proposal at the time, did say they were going to grandfather in current contributions.
Oh, this is a loophole. He keeps referring to things as loopholes. They're not loopholes. They're tax laws.
Okay, well, in any case.
I always explain it to my kids. You know, they keep calling them loopholes. They're not loopholes. They're tax laws. They don't say they're a loophole. They're tax laws. Whether you agree with them or not, they're not loopholes. They're tax laws.
You mean if the shortest road for me to get from my house to the market was a 35-mile-an-hour speed limit? But if I took another highway that was longer and at a 45-mile-an-hour speed limit and got there faster, would that be a loophole or would that be taking advantage of the
environment?
Yeah.
You're not taking advantage of anything. You're just acting in your own best self-interest.
Yes.
They're not loopholes.
Fine. I don't think I used the term loophole.
You didn't, but the president of the United States continual and the media keeps calling them loopholes. I don't want to get too caught up in this loophole
thing. How do you feel about that?
But they're not loopholes.
What is a loophole?
Oh, actually, I looked this up a while ago.
You did?
Yeah. Yeah, actually, I did. It has to do with a way of...
A loophole. I don't know what that means. A loophole.
Yeah, I can't even remember. I couldn't even remember.
A loophole.
I'll have to look it up.
So they're not tax loopholes. And our point here is there is that possibility that you save a lot in a Roth, and in the future, your withdrawals are taxed at some nature. It could be a value-added tax that the government has put in place at that time because they've changed the tax structure, a flat tax that changed. So you do run the risk of having tax law change in the future, and it could be some taxable form of that. So that needs to be taken into consideration. Now, we wanted to make sure we take a couple emails that have come in. Here's one from Steve. Hey, guys. How he refers to us, Pat? Guys. We used to be called the boys. When we first started, we were both in our 20s, and people would call us the boys. We're not the boys anymore. Hey, guys, how to invest in oil with oil now at $50 a barrel? How does one go about investing in oil? Well, you can't really go out and buy oil directly. There are futures markets. You can buy options in the future, but you can't really go out and buy oil. If you think instead you want to speculate that oil is going to go up in price.
You would use it through options.
You can use it through options, or you can buy stocks and companies that would benefit from a higher oil price. But you're not really going to go out and invest in oil per se. I also would state, unless you were one that already predicted accurately that oil was going to fall from $110 a barrel to under $50 a barrel, your prediction of oil going up in price in the future may not be.
If you're going to do this, wade into the pool very, very slowly.
Don't do it. We just saw a few weeks back.
Scott, what do you mean don't do? Maybe the guy's worth $1 million. He wants to do it with $10,000.
Then use options. Talk to a broker. I talked to a commodities broker, someone that specializes in commodities or futures, and
you could do it that way. But do it for a very small portion of your portfolio.
Treat it as
speculative.
Yes, not your retirement. I mean, clear earmark a tiny bit off.
A loophole is a small opening through which small arms may be fired. A similar opening to admit light and air to permit observation.
What?
That's what a loophole is.
What, you're reading a definition of something?
Yeah. What is a loophole? A small opening through. Where am I reading this?
So that you can fire something at. So they were created on purpose.
Yes, absolutely. They were created on purpose.
Okay, then. All right. We've got another question, email we're going to take here, McLean.
Okay. I'm 100% focused on this.
Yeah. My mother has moved into long-term care for her Alzheimer's disease. Oh, boy. We need to access additional funds to pay for her care and would like to understand our options. She owns her home and has lived there until the beginning of this year. Her home is currently vacant. We'd like to avoid capital gains if we sell her home. How long do we have to sell her home before she loses this tax-free benefit? If we rent her home, does she automatically lose the benefit to sell her home without paying capital gain taxes? I understand this is limited to the first $250,000 gain. Is this correct? Are there any other options we may not be aware of? Yes, there are. She did not owe anything on her home. She's the original owner, purchased it for $40,000 in 1979. It's worth today $450,000.
Okay.
Here's the thing. So she paid $40,000 for it. She probably put some improvements in it over the years, but still, under $100,000. If it's sold today, there is going to be gain, probably $350,000 or more of gain, of which $250,000 will avoid capital gains.
Unless.
And you've got 3 years to do that. You've got to be at your primary residence two of the last 5 years. So you've got actually up to 3 years to sell this home.
Unless she was married to someone and they died previously and it received a step up in basis for that one half of the home.
If that's the case, then her cost basis, even though she purchased it for $40,000 in 79, would be somewhat higher because half of it, at least half of it, would have been reset to the value.
Date of the death of the spouse.
And if it was held on community property, then the whole thing could have been.
So my guess is.
But there's further. Let's say that this home was held until the day she passed away, you would inherit that home with no capital gain taxes currently.
Currently.
Because you would have the home would be received with a full stepped up basis. So the home value would be stepped up.
My guess is
that. So you can rent the thing out until she finally passes away.
My guess is that she was probably married to someone, and that person, if they had died, received a full step up in basis. So you've got to ask your tax accountant this question and give them the numbers. Yeah.
And if that's the case, then sell the house now.
I would sell this house as soon as possible.
I
wouldn't even run a vacuum through it. I would just list it for sale in this marketplace. A family relative, I had made the recommendations. They sold the house in a week, and they were, because they needed the money to take care of.
And you need the money. So, anyway, we are out of time. Unfortunately, we are here every Saturday from 10 to 11. We then rebroadcast the same program, Sundays from 2 to 3. During the week, if you want to learn more, go to HansomMcLean.com. It's got a lot of great stuff on our website at HansomMcLean.com. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. We'll see you next week. Thanks for being part of us.